Omaha Public Radio presents another lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Jinmei Wan, professor of philosophy at Creighton University and award-winning author of several books, including The Moon is Over the Parapet, Village Lokan, and most recently, Huslin Hazel. She'll speak on the topic literature as a way of seeking for the truth. Her remarks were given as part of the 12th Annual Asian Culture Week, presented by Creighton's Asian World Center. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, April 18, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of Creighton University, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Mary Helen Stefaniak, Professor of English and Creative Writing at Creighton University.
Dr. Yuan is professor of philosophy at Creighton University. She received her PhD at the University of Hawaii at Manoa in 2000. Her specialties and research focus on comparative logic and Chinese literature. Her publications include numerous scholarly papers and a book on comparative logic, and seven books in Chinese literature. While we know Jinmei Yuan as a professor of philosophy here at Creighton, in China, she is an award-winning novelist. She has received many literature awards, including the UNITAS Literature Award in 2003, the China Press Nonfiction Award in 2005, the Beijing Literature Novella Award in 2004, 2008, and 2011, so that's for three different novellas, the People's Literature Award in 2009, the Selected Novels Award in 2010, and the Lao Shi Essay Award nomination in 2014. Her recent novel, Huslin Hazel, which she's going to tell you about, was ranked as one of the best five novels of the year in 2015. So all of those awards are for the fiction that you have written in China, mostly novels and novellas. In her talk today, literature as a way of seeking for truth, using her own practice in Chinese literature and producing literature as a case study, she will argue that if truth can be pursued by questioning, and if a good literary work questions the core of humanity and human conditions, then doing literature can be one of the ways in seeking for truth. While logic uses forms and patterns to prove the validity of thoughts, literature uses images to bridge realities and thoughts. As Plato puts it, the seeker for truth moves from the beautiful bodies to beautiful practices and then to beautiful thoughts until he comes to understand the absolute beauty and know what the essence of beauty is. That's what Plato says. Jinmei Yuan says, the fun is in the process. So help me in welcoming Jinmei Yuan.
Well, it is my honor to give a presentation at this great event. Thank you, Maurong, for organizing this, and also thank you, Mary Helen, to introduce me. I'm going to do a presentation, but first of all, I want to demonstrate my argument. I'm a philosopher and a logician. I'm going to have an argument. So I'm going to read the introduction briefly. So you know, before I do the presentation, you know what is my argument. First of all, I want to let you know this title, Literature as a Way for Seeking for the Truth, actually is a title not from me. It's from poet Lu Ye. Lu Ye, she writes a poem. I doing philosophy, we often discuss over email and phone, and I pretty much sure doing philosophy is seeking for truth. One day she told me, actually, literature is also a way for seeking for the truth. That gave me pretty deep impression, and I thought maybe this is a good title for both of us. Unfortunately, she couldn't come. Today, she's still in Dallas. Her flight was delayed for about like 12 hours already. So I'm going to take the whole show. hopefully, it's not that boring. I try to be not boring. This part, the beginning part, could be a little boring because I'm going to read my argument as a philosopher. This is something I have to do. Okay, this is my introduction. How to seeking for truth is one of the fundamental questions for philosophers to think. The real problem is that the truth is always hidden from human intelligence. Scientists make a hypothesis and then test them in the labs by using advanced equipment. Logicians use forms and patterns to prove that validity of thoughts so that mistakes could be avoided during the thinking process. This is our great methodologies and skills for doing reasoning, which will help us to discover truth in different areas. Turning to talk about human life and society, which could be one of the most interesting and complicated areas for us to understand. We face a contradictory fact. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. This is a quote from Kierkegaard. What we could, based on for doing research on life in general, or a group of people's life in particular, oftentimes is the past experience. This is a field that opens for literature writings. From the perspective of examining life, philosophers and works are overlapped at this area. Examining life is a process. That was a process started from Socrates, which has to be a continuation of wondering, inquiring, and questioning. In this presentation, two of my recent novels will be used as a case study. One is a Chronicle of Bluegate Village, and the other is Heston Hazard. I shall argue that if the passion for the truth starts from wonder and inquiring, if truth can be pursued by questioning, and if a good literature, if a good literary work questions the core of humanity and human conditions passionately, then doing literature can be one of ways in seeking for truth. Using my practice, Chinese literature, as a case study, I shall demonstrate my argument that while logic uses forms and patterns to prove the value of thoughts, literature uses image to bridge realities and thoughts. Good questions are the guide for those processes. I shall discuss that irrational reality deserves good questions. Most of my writings are started from questions to those illogical cases in the real life. It is important for me as a logician to seek for a logical coherence between the reality and the thoughts. Logical forms often fail to do this job alone because it only deals with a pure thinking process, but literary images could carry this mission out because image links the real world and the thoughts. That is the reason why I like both logic and literature. There are four questions which guide my writings for these two novels, but the logic that I demonstrated in my presentation is not a preset. I don't have this logical structure of my novels and writings before I write it. But the questions always push me move forward. The demonstration that I will share with you actually is an acceptable result of my reasoning after I finish my writing. The four questions are related to Chinese culture and the Chinese way of thinking. The first one I will talk about is, who are we as a human being and as Chinese? Second, what's wrong with us when a whole country tends to be crazy, such as in the Cultural Revolution or recently regionalist movement? Three, if no one
could keep clean hands in a massive social crime, then what is the problem if we merely live as a collective beings? The fourth question, could it be possible that our Chinese great people Chinese people would like to think we are great Chinese, all have some problems? Literature writings actually allow me to deal with irrational reality by looking into human conditions. A better understanding of those conditions, such as our biological condition and the limitation of language, psychological status, and the barrier of cultural differences, in fact, leads me to see the core of humanity, which is the hope or the beauty shining on the way while one is doing either a logical reasoning or a poetic creation, pointing out the problems caused by human limitation and discovering the beauty of humanity are two types of fruits while seeking for truth. My conclusion is that life is a real art. The right art is purposeless, ominous. Quote, this is from Zen Buddhism, Suzuki. While doing my writing, I understand myself better and also I'm able to refine my life, like polishing a piece of real art. The satisfaction and joy of doing both, as the quote that Mary Hannah read from Plato, it's looking for, it's seeking for beauty. If God has the truth, for me, this is a process. This process of seeking for truth is good enough for my life. I'm doing a work that a human can do. Fun is in the process. Literature, as good as logic, helped me understand the absolute beauty and how, and know what is the essence of a beauty. So this is my argument. And now I demonstrate my presentation. The first part could be boring, the rest will not. This is a quote I just read from Kierkegaard. We have to look backwards so that we can understand life. The irrational reality deserves a good question. I wrote my novel. This novel is about the Cultural Revolution, Chronicle of Blue Gate Village. It's a rethinking of Cultural Revolution happening in China. Probably most of you know what the Cultural Revolution is. Maybe some of students don't know. I will tell you, I will say it soon. When Cultural Revolution started, I was a child. And my way of looking at the world is probably oftentimes upside to adults. I saw an illogical world. It tends to be pretty interesting and also weird. It's beyond my understanding. A human being stand there in this painting, and another human being point out at him. This is called criticize. But a group of human beings were criticized by another group of human beings. Only strange thing is that all this was done by people, the most ordinary sort of people. They are collective beings. They criticize someone as a group and make that person feel very lonely. And this person actually is what they call landlord, bad person, and so on. I couldn't understand for a long time why people could do this. If I probably give all the students F, I might deserve this. So the question which guide my writings are, who we are? How could we do such things? We are human beings or beasts? Second, what's wrong with us when a whole country tends to be crazy? Of course, I would think this is not my fault. I was little. My hand is clean. I didn't do anything. I just a follower or a victim. let's do a criticize or critique on the culture. Chinese culture has a problem. Let's just look at it. What's that? If no one during the Cultural Revolution, all this kind of massive crime, if no one could keep clean hands in a massive social crime, then what's wrong with us to live as a collective being? Could it be possible that our great Chinese culture, great Chinese as a nation, all have problems? I start with the first one. Question one, who are we? Human beings or beast? I did a biological study on human conditions. Don't feel surprised, I do literature writing, but also I want to look at biological perspectives. That's because my dad is a biological professor. He teaches biology. He teaches biology. My dad's a biology professor. He taught biology at universities for all his life. So I have this natural interest, sort of like a part of me, listen to my dad talking about monkeys, apes, things I was little. Doing a research on biological is normal. I did biological research. I found this tree at, human being and monkeys, old world monkeys, split. Human being and the apes all share a gene called PAN. And then till about 6 million of thousand years ago, human being and the chimpanzee split. So we are moved to the one direction. And then at about 3 million of years ago, chimpanzee and the bonobo split. Well, if we want to understand the human being better, should we understand our closed ape relatives, chimpanzee and bonobos? So I did more research on chimpanzee and bonobos. A comparison of Chinese behaviors in the Cultural Revolution to our ape ancestors. I found out both chimpanzee and bonobo are very interesting. Chimpanzee could be very violent. The bottom is chimpanzee punish one of their chimpanzee fellows. Now, look at what we did in the Cultural Revolution. We punish our fellow human beings in a very similar way. We call this rude, or we call this barbaria. There are some similarities to our chimpanzee ancestor. Are we similar? Pretty similar. Chimpanzee knows how to use tools to punish other chimpanzees or maybe other animals. We use the tools to punish our fellow human beings. Do we feel better about ourselves? Our politicians still doing this kind of chimpanzee politics. They argue, they tend to be mean to each other. Well, now we see some connections. This is a summary about the fact, the interesting fact that I found out. Human beings and chimpanzee share more than 97% to 98% of genetic blueprint. Surprising. We have similar blood types, A and O. Chimpanzee has 32 T's, and their body temperature is similar, but they cannot swim. I can swim. And also, chimpanzee can use a facial expression to convey their emotion. Of course, chimpanzee is a society, male-dominant. Very hierarchical. The structure of society is male-dominant. There will always be an alpha male. Alpha male give order. Alpha male use pretty violent way to rule. When they have to change power position, there will be always a fight. Similar to all those dictators. Now I have to look at another society,
Bonobo. Bonobo is a lucky, it's a group of lucky apes. Although the forest was gone, they are lucky to find out some forest in the deep woods in Africa. They live peacefully. They share about 98% of our genetic blueprints. They also have a conflict. There are always a conflict. Even in, it doesn't matter in the chimpanzee, tribes, or human society, they will always have conflict. Bonobo is good at deal with conflict. They use intercourse and or sharing food and to solve the problem. If there are conflict, they mate so that don't fight. They mate. And then one of the interesting stories that I read when I was doing bonobo research was scientists brought in a bunch of ginger leaves, which is the food the bonobos like very much. And then they also brought in a jar of honey. That is also what they love. They love. And then a male bonobo found those desserts first. He didn't eat it. Look, they like sharing food. He didn't eat it. He was a jump and jump, felt so happy. Wait till alpha female come. So bonobo society is a alpha female lead. Alpha female found those food. She didn't eat neither. She wait for all the group, all his her group come. She used the ginger leaves, dip in the jar, pass to everyone. Sharing food. There was a female bonobo. She was unhappy. She was stand away in the river because she had just had a fight with another male bonobo. So the consequence was everyone was eating. She was the one aside. It ends up that the male bonobo who just had a fought, had a fight with this female one ran to the river. Mating. After mating, he brought over this female, everyone share food. If problem, if conflict can be shared in this way, can be solved in this way, that would be great. What is that? We can call it emotion. This what this emotion is? Love. Okay, we'll move on. If a society or a global society or human society has this love as their fundamental moral code, of course we can find out lots of peaceful moment or peaceful society. There are lots of details I'm not going to talk about. If you have interest, you can do your own research. Females always has a high status in the society. Mother-son relations very close. Well, now let's think about, are we similar to bonobos in many ways? I want to compare to Chinese culture and the bonobo. Chinese culture emphasizes eating. Eating and having sex around is what bonobo like. Eating, of course, is a big part in Chinese culture. You find a Chinese restaurant everywhere on the world. Mating, having sex around. Look at those corrupt officials. When they have little power, immediately they try to do something pretty much similar to what bonobo did. This is our human condition. Scientists did research on the brain about bonobo and a human being. They share some the emotion part of bonobo and a human being are pretty similar, but they are also part they are not similar. Okay, now I have to do the second question. This question also is not the question I had before I write the novel. This question comes to me why I'm writing novel. Now I just demonstrate the logical structure in my thought. This question is, what's wrong with us when a whole country tends to be crazy? If I want to examine Chinese culture, where should I start with? This is a culture that has thousands of years. What is the start point for me to do research? Now I have another benefit, my mom. My mom is a Chinese literature professor. So when I was little, she showed me all kinds of classical Chinese books,
One of the books is very interesting. This book's called Shuo Wen. It's the earliest Chinese, it's one of the earliest Chinese classical books. It's a etymological book. So I decided I'm going to do an etymological examination. This is the examination. I want to find out the cultural stand. It doesn't matter how many years this culture lasts, thousands of years, 2,000 years. If this cultural stance can be found in the words and in the language, it will last forever and also in my in our mind and in our language. We were shaped by language, and our thought was shaped by language. So I want to find out, is there some special character cultural stand or characteristics in Chinese culture language? I found out, this is what I found out from my mom's book, Shuo Wen. It's an early Chinese lexicon. Many Chinese characters share three things. Chinese character is pictographic. It looks like a little simple drawing. I will show you later. Three things are related. Fighting. You're going to see the characters related to the fighting all the time. Second, eating. Lots of words related to eat. And also having sex. Now, this is my evidence. When Chinese ask me to learn how to speak or to write, the background moral codes that are deeply buried in the language, all the judgment buried in the words always impact me. The pictographical nature of Chinese characters could be used to explain the hidden normativity in Chinese culture. That's the thing I want to find out. What is the true fact, true life, or true thoughts in all those hidden in all those reality? There are I show you some examples of Chinese characters. You don't know Chinese characters, some of you, but it's okay. I can explain to you. Even I do not explain to you, you can see it, you can understand it, because it's a pictographical. As I said, you will find lots of characters related to the three things: fighting, and eating, and sex. Let's look at this two words. One is the ancestor. The part of ancestor in the right side of your ancestor. What is that from the perspective of a pictographic? Well, the another half is a worship. This a human worship. Worship what? Worship means organ for reproduction. This is what they call ancestor. Shuo Wen says, it pronounced as a Zhu. The Shuo Wen says, Zhu, a Xuan to worship, a tribe ancestor. How to worship? Worship their capacity of reproduction. Sex. Another word, country. The concept of country in Chinese culture. Shuo Wen says it's a guo, it pronounced as a guo. Guo is a stay. It associates with mouth and spa. We have this boundary. For what? We're going to fight for food. This is the meaning, deep meaning of country. This is what I said, sex and fighting. Roots in Chinese culture. Now, let's see something good. Fight and fighting for food pretty much has this connection with our ape ancestor, such as a chimpanzee. Now let's say something better. We are human beings. We may share the gene which apes or blueprints that apes and bonobo both have, because when human beings split with a bonobo and a chimpanzee, they haven't split yet. So we may have both both blueprints in our blood. Now, this is a Chinese virtue. Eating and the virtues. Eating, how can eating tend to be a virtue concept? Yeah, they do. So the eating, the beauty, the first word called is Mei, beauty. The top part of this word beauty is sheep. The bottom part of this beauty is large. So what is the beauty? Large ship is beauty. That's the second one. I really like these characters. This means goodness. Of course, this is moral concept. The top is the sheep. The bottom is a happy, is a big happy mouse. Sheep at the top and taste the good. And everyone smile. So in Chinese culture, eating and the virtue are related. What do we mean by beauty? What do we mean by goodness? It got to have some material involved. Bring me good food. Bring me large ship. The connotation of these two words, share each other. We all have a ship at the top. Now, another one. Sex and the virtue. How could the sex can play the role of virtue? The first word actually is the connective words. And it's very often, if you look at and, you won't get any sexual feelings. No Americans will get any sexual feelings. But look at the top one, that is the Chinese classical and. The second part, the second is the confirmative words, like the ending words, to confirm what it is. The confirmative words to end a confirmative sentence. It's all, sometimes it also can be used as and. Shuo Wen tells us, this word is pronounced as ye. It is an intercourse with a female. All those pictographic future of Chinese character, actually, of Chinese characters, actually discovered something for me to write my stories. If I want to get into Chinese culture deep and right, I have to understand Chinese morality and Chinese society. It has a close relation with fighting, sex, and eating. Language is our unique identification. The evidence we found in Chinese etymology, Chinese culture has difficulties. This is what I have found. Chinese culture has difficulties to shake off the shadow connects to our app tribe cultures. So when you do business with the Chinese, consider that. We are biologically and linguistically conditional. Chinese probably, they are even more seriously biologically and linguistically conditional because their words carried from thousands of years has this clear connection. But both Chinese and whatever, Americans or whoever, we all are human beings. We want to think. When thinking happens, this is something we have to question. What makes a human being a human? What do we mean by humanity in Chinese culture? How can I write humanity in Chinese culture right? What is that the 2% that make us human? According to Confucius said, this is very interesting. When Aristotle said, what make us human? Aristotle said, we have this organ. He called it function. He called it reasoning. We are rational beings so that we can do reasoning. That's why we separate from beast. Confucius didn't do that way. Confucius says, there is a special emotion that make us human. This emotion he called filial piety. It's a special love. Now we can understand. That's because the Chinese culture emphasize very, very detailed, very material things when we're talking about. We cannot separate the humanity, things we are ourselves are human beings. So we just have to start it. Xiao, that is filial piety. It's a crucial concept in Confucius' virtues. The word shows an image that the old man sits at the top. A young kid supported the old man at the bottom. How? That means good. It's a word shows the image that a woman and a child. Women and a child. Women reproduce a child. That means good. That is how. That is a beauty. During Cultural Revolution, what's wrong? It is not because a human being in China, or Chinese didn't follow Aristotle's virtual continence virtue. It is because it's wrong. They demonstrate their own culture. They demonstrate their own filial piety. They demonstrate their own special culture that emphasize love, emphasize sharing. There are five basic virtues: order, li, ritual order; yi, moral appreciate; lian, honesty and purity; chi, sense of shame. All damage. They do not give a human being even from the basic moral foundation that Chinese culture hold. Love. Now, this is my conclusion when I finish this novel. The conclusion is, Cultural Revolution is a national throwback. Not only morally, but also behaviorally. That's why people beat each other, torture each other. A collective civilization, as Chinese civilization, is a collective civilization. A collective civilization takes a chance for being morally right or wrong. Moral and atavism is the real tragedy for a collective society. Cultural revolution is a cultural suicide. The Chinese start to damage their own moral codes, which is pretty good. It shares with bonobos, our ancestor bonobos, peace, no war, but peace. It was damaged. For a social crime, none could keep his hand clean, including the one who kept silent to the evils. I'm done with this book. I started with my other book. My other book is a book about war. It's about violence, because I want to talk about violence. I want to do more research on violence so that I can find out what the human condition is. How can we deal with this violence? Heston Hesser actually is the name of a bomber in the World War II. Americans sending the troops and the Air Force to China to fight against the Japanese. So this is the name of bomber. It's a novel about rethinking of the impact of violence and our efforts in seeking for peace. Of course, war is no doubt violence. I started with this. The whole book that I want to do is I want to find out, is there a way we can have a chance for peace? Now we know we are connected. In my first book, I found out we are deeply connected with our Ape ancestor. In my second book, I want to do some research to find out, is that possible? We can find a path to the peace so that we can make us a human being. We can reserve humanity. So this goes to my third question. If no one could keep clean hands in massive social crimes, such as war, such as Cultural Revolution, then what's wrong with us to live as a collective beings? Why we don't want to live as a collective beings? In practice, Confucius virtues make us a human being. Confucius virtues emphasize virtues got to be practiced in humanity. So all those moral codes that Confucius give to us emphasize respect your parents, respect your elder brothers, everything's hierarchical, but always there are love. So Confucius' virtue is based on collective society. According to my research, because virtues are not law, they can have due effects. Sometimes, for example, respect your father could be great and beautiful. But what if your father commit a crime? This is the problem Plato tried to deal with. When Lucifer's father kills somebody, should Lucifer report? It ends at Socrates believe Lucifer should report, but according to Confucius, no, you shouldn't, because love is more important. Love your father is over than right or wrong. So that's why I say there are problems in Chinese Confucius virtues. For this part, I believe literature actually as a good means for me to study human nature, both as individual and as a collective being. Now, I separate the moral codes. Moral resource, of course, that's our 2% humanity. I would say both those moral codes are represent our humanity, but they are separate. Some moral codes are individual moral codes. Some moral codes I would call collective moral codes. What are individual moral codes then? When Kant bringing this idea in, humanity itself is dignity. For man cannot be used merely as means by any man, but must be always used at the same time as an end. So never treat humanity as a means. It got to be the end. Let's look at what Confucius said. Confucius says, rulers should employ their ministers by observing their ritual behaviors. Do they follow the filial piety? And ministers should serve their lord by doing their utmost. So when rulers use their ministers is a means for them. Well, let's see. Don't blame Confucius. You find a similar moral code in American culture, especially in army. I'm going to write a World War II story. My story, at least, start from World War II. The military is the part I have to deal with. Look at what General MacArthur said. Collective moral codes, duty, honor, country. They both are good. Both virtues in as individual and both virtues as individual and moral and collective morals. But at the wartime, we use collective virtues. Should we continue to use collective virtues all the way till war end and during Cultural Revolution, and all the way till the time now doing economic development? My story is about the pilots in Chinese-American composite wing in World War II. This is they start with 100 pilots, half Americans, half Chinese. And the idea comes from Chinook. He wants to put them together so that they can fall together. Chinese don't have pilots at that time. They send the pilots to come to the United States. Chinook believe send the Chinese young men to the United States, train them so that they know how to fly. And then they fought with Americans. Each cruise, half Chinese, half Americans pilots. So they fought actually pretty closely. And at the same time, cultural conflict got to be involved in it. There are lots of things American pilots couldn't understand, but Chinese pilots understood. When they fought war, they lost their air base. For Americans, done. One of the first best air base lost it. They were sad. And then they moved to the safe place all the way to the back west. Chinese has ceremony because some high official come to interview those pilots. They don't have oil. They don't have equipment. They cannot fight the war. That's why they lost the first air base, Henyang. Now Chinese minister wear those beautiful, shiny uniform, and has this big airplane come to interview them. All the American pilots and the Chinese pilots were ordered, stand in a long line, texting their airplane out, stand in front of their airplane in the August, hot day, well, with their uniform on. And this Chinese, the administrators come. Not only that, there are second airplane behind him. A bunch of people come. Those people are the people also wear nice uniform. What they did is hit the drum, sing songs, blew the horn to make things like celebrate. Americans couldn't understand what you can celebrate. We don't have oil to fight. You celebrate. But Chinese pilots understood. The ministry come to this composite wing. It's because they pay attention to this group. They probably will give us more oil, more money later on. So this is the cultural collective morality and individual morality. My story is a real story based on my girlfriend, one of my close girlfriend's mom. She dated one of the Chinese pilots. During the war, there are lots of conflict. This man, as a pilot, he has to choose, fought for the country, for the honor, for the duty, for the country, or go back home to be with his loving girls. He decided country first. This is a military wartime moral code. He did. Well, at the end of that, they fought pretty hard. Later on, the war ends. This man has to face choice. Should he continue to practice military moral codes, or he can be an individual human being? The problem is he joined the Communist Party. He went to Taiwan, got his last mission from the Communist Party to steal one of American B-24, which at that time was very, very strong, powerful bombers. Communist Party never had it. Communist Party chased the nationalism all the way to Taiwan. And then they give this man a mission, steal one of B-24, come back. He did. He flew this B-24, come back to China, become a hero. Of course, he got honor, he got duty, he practiced his duty, he did for Chinese country. His girl, she's my girlfriend's mom. She's just a 19 years old girl, carried her baby. They haven't got married yet. She didn't know what's going on. All her think about for love. So she, after he left, she from rich family. Their family was high officials in Chinese nationalism, and also the father of this woman is a banker. She took a boat individually at the pitch dark night all the way to Macau. From Macau, she got another boat with 49 high officials in nationalism, still secretly back to China. For her, all she wanted is seeking for love. Well, at the end of that, the stories tend to be very interesting. Can individual love survive in a collective society that continue practice military moral codes? Why those red guards tend to be so crazy? Who told them to do that? Chairman Mao, did they question is it right or wrong? They didn't. Why? Because in the military society, soldiers shouldn't question anything. You just do whatever your command teach you to do. Well, now this man go back to China, and he's still in the Chinese Communist Party military, and later on, even he's no longer in the military, his mindset was still a military. Communist Party said that you cannot marry that girl. She is from different class. You cannot marry her. Love cannot stand. Cannot even last in this collective society. Should military morality be practiced in the civilian life? They do in China. They do this practice in Korea, North Korea. They do this kind of practice. Now, my last question is, could it be possible that Chinese all have problems if they practice military moral codes, even during the peaceful time, even no wars? This is what I found out. Military morality, or this moral codes, can function well during the wartime. People worship those heroes. But during the civilian life, we want to respect human beings. We want to respect individuals. We want to respect humanity. If we continue to tell those people, like those soldiers or heroes, you don't have your own choice. You must do whatever this country asks you to do. This is violence. This violence is a psychological violence. Psychological violence, similar to any physical violence, it has impact on human being. It has impact on human mind. This is what I found out. Individual as individual is so important because this is my personal identity. When I live this life. I can say I live for someone else, for the country, for everybody. It's great for my life. But when I die, I have to face this fact. I'm the only one who die. No one can replace me. No matter how strong my country is, how many medal I win from this, I got from this country. Collective being. It asks a person to play a role in this tribe, in this community, or in this military, simply based on duty. It is important for a person to have his own his or her individual identity. So nature opened the space for me to explore individual character minds and their hearts after they lived in both collective society and in the peaceful time. This is what I found out. Chinese all had psychological damage, most of them. They all had PTSD. Well, because my parents are professors, so I was punished. I was sent to this place called the toilet factory. I make a toilet. The toilet that I made was not the toilet that you see in the bathroom. This is the toilet I made. It's a wood red toilet. I have to make 90 toilets per week. Well, as a teenager, I was 16 years old, I make toilet. Well, I'm not the only one. There are a few of us. We all are 16 years old. We are making toilet. We are all our professors' children. So it ends that we do one thing. We sign on our toilet. Every toilet, we signed our name. There are something that's so important. We don't just want to make a toilet. We want to be someone. At least I want some people know who I, where I was, and who I was. This is the situation. Any form of denying the existence of a human life is a violence. The problem, this is what I say, the problem of practicing collective moral codes in the peaceful time, it's a violence. It's a violence because it denies a human being. Part of human rights, at least. So my right to go to college was denied. I was using the main toilet. There are costs. Any violence has a cost. Violence in the war has a cost. Violence in the peacetime also has a cost. All the violence has a cost. The cost of living as a collective being has a cost. The cost is, first, they come for, this is a famous poem. First, they come to socialism. No one talk, no one speak, because I'm not socialism. And then they come for the trade unions. And I do not speak, because I'm not trade unions. And then they come for the Jew, and then I don't speak out, because I was not Jew. Then they come for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. Because I lived as obedience, as a collective being, I never fight for myself. I never signed my signature, even in the toilet. That's my fate. When someone come to me, nobody fight for me, I'm done. I'm just a victim of collective society. This is a psychological result. This kind of psychological torture, well, in that, they also have evidence in human brain, in human nerve system. This is called PTSD. PTSD is a common term in the United States, but it's probably unfamiliar with Chinese. They don't want people talk about PTSD. But in my book, I talked about PTSD. I was talking about in that pilot's village. He obeyed all his life. He didn't marry the girl. He was suffered. They were suffered. It ends at the whole village get PTSD. His whole village, everyone has PTSD. I don't know why Communist Party actually didn't censor that part. It was out. So this is my discovery for the case two. My case two is Heston Hazard. This is my discovery. Any form of violence is evil, no matter war or revolution. It is necessary to separate two sets of virtues. The conflicts between individual moral codes and the collective moral codes sometimes are unavoidable. Number three, any violence has impact even after it's stopped. One after another violence many Chinese have been found, I found, had PTSD. And we have one of students did very good research on PTSD in Chinese mind. He wrote a very good paper about that. Avoiding and forbidding to discuss man-made tragedy is against human nature and mental health. Ending a war, this is number four. Number five, ending a war or stopping a revolution is the first step to stop violence. Finding the path to peace is the second step. We saw the second step. We saw the peace, all the sacrifice for stopping war, for stopping revolution will be in vain, will be meaningless. There is no other choice for us except try very hard to keep that 2%, what we call humanity, until we find the path to the peace. This 2% will not be saved. The humanity will not be saved. My conclusion, with the passion to the truth and guided by my questions, literature leads me to explore the truth. Of course, fun is in the process. You see, I had fun. And this is a quote we already read. The essence of beauty that I understand during my research is humanity. That's all.
You've been listening to a lecture program from Creighton University on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Jinmei Wan, professor of philosophy at Creighton University and award-winning author of several books, including The Moon is Over the Parapet, Village Wokan, and most recently, Huslin Hazel. She spoke on the topic, Literature as a Way of Seeking for the Truth. Her remarks were given as part of the 12th Annual Asian Culture Week, presented by Creighton's Asian World Center. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday afternoon, April 18, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Cindy Workman, Director of Public Relations at Creighton University, and to Maorang Jiang, Director of the Asian World Center, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.